Hi, I'm Ashley.
I'm Emily.
And this is Misconceptions, a podcast about two gals who understand the painful, emotional, sometimes absurd, and often lonely experiences of infertility.
Join us as we relive our own stories and welcome the many others willing to share their adventures. I feel like we're going to call this episode, That's a Wrap, or something
like
stupid.
That.
We just wanted to come on and talk about our first season of Misconceptions. And I wrote down some takeaways that I had from the season. I feel like maybe you did the same, Ashley.
Of course.
I know, because you're an eight. And then we can talk about like what we're looking forward to when we're working behind the scenes for season two.
Yes. So, including maybe some travel.
Oh, yes.
In-person recording.
Oh, my gosh. That does be nice. So wonderful.
Yeah.
And you're,
I feel like Hawaii is the right place to meet.
That's true. We could have those freaking Mai Tais we always talk about, even though people listening don't know we always talk about those, but we do love a Mai Tai on Misconceptions.
Yeah. Emily has even consumed one in front of me before.
That's right. The audacity. The nerve. Yeah. Okay.
How do we talk about testicles now? All my notes are about testicles.
Oh, you have testicle notes?
Yeah, I do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, do you want to talk about something that you noticed from season one?
Okay. Well, the first thing that was like glaringly obvious is that there's such a lack of mental health support.
Yes.
In the whole infertility realm. And I wish I knew how to make that better. We talked a little bit about it last episode. It would be so nice if this could be like a new discipline within like counseling and everything like that, because, you know, rates are just going up of people needing intervention and experiencing this. And I think it would just be so important, and it would be a step in helping people feel less alone.
Yeah.
And but then I learned about PCOS, which I knew nothing about, because I guess I didn't have it. So I was just like, nope, can't spend brain space on that. But it's actually so interesting and so common, and and like such a worldwide, it like stretches between all kinds of socioeconomic things, like it's just sort of everywhere. So that was very interesting. Now every time I hear someone struggling, I think, oh, I wonder if they have PCOS.
Right.
That's my go-to, like, they probably do. Yeah,
like we can just look at people now and be like, girl, you have PCOS.
Tell me a little bit about your periods.
Yes.
What about you? What did you,
I think kind of in the same vein as PCOS, but like, I think we feel so alone when we're going through this experience. And I think we feel like we're in this deep, like, infertility hole. And if we talk about it, it's so shameful and vulnerable. But there's so much commonality. Like, I think we heard so many stories that were similar. And if they had just found somebody to talk to about it, like during their time in that space, like they'd realize really quickly that so many people can understand what they're going through and can empathize and can offer support. And it feels so I remember feeling so embarrassed and alone, but I wasn't. And I just didn't know that at the time. You know, and I think an odd number of people feel like their stories are unimportant or like
boring.
Not, yes.
I always say it's boring.
Or not unique. Like,
yeah.
But just after I said that everybody like has shared experiences, it's every story's different and every interaction with people is different. And what you learned and when you learned it and what you tried, like, mm-hmm. I don't know. People do have unique stories to share. Everybody's story is unique.
Yeah, it sure is. And I didn't realize, in speaking about that, I didn't realize how prevalent secondary infertility is.
Right.
And how that's like a different kind of hard.
Totally.
Because it's got to be very confusing to you. And then to have people saying like, well, you know, you can get pregnant or like.
Yeah.
Like yeah.
The medical field is saying, be careful because your body knows what to do now. So you're just going to get pregnant right away. You have to prevent. And then what is like 1 in 10 people who have had a baby will experience infertility. Like that doesn't, wow. Those don't. I guess, I mean, that seems like a lot of people to me. I guess it's 1 in 10, but still.
It's a lot. I think it's a lot. Yeah. And even within that secondary infertility club, there are so many different stories. I guess it's that pregnancy can really change your body too and mess with your hormones and do all kinds of things that, I mean, you're a different person.
Yeah.
When you have that baby, you're a completely different human being. So you're like starting from scratch. But how do you forget that you've already done this once? Like,
right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah.
And I think, you know, I think a lot of people we talked to, all the people we talked to, talked about factually similar things like the 2 week wait and going online to see if that there was a second line on their pregnancy test. Like,
yeah,
there's such similar fact finding. But so we like seek out commonality for things that are concrete. Like, is there a line or not a line, or, you know, the 2 week wait sucks and trying to conceive, like, that sex is terrible and repetitive. And, but the minute we talk about the emotions of it, it's like, I'm alone. I'm the only one who feels this way. There's so much shame. It's like, we have to extend some like grace to ourselves, you know, that people will be able to hold our emotions because it's just the same for everyone.
Yeah, you're right. And I think that, you know, the other side of things, like, I mean, I want to learn so much more about male infertility.
Yes.
I think everyone's trying to learn more about that. Including, you know, doctors and everyone trying to figure out what's happening there. But, okay. So this is mhclinic.ca. Men's health clinic, and it's in Winnipeg where I live, and they have a fabulous website that is just really approachable information, and I got like lots of facts from there. And they said that male factor is solely responsible in around 20% of cases of infertility.
Wow.
And contributes to another 30 to 40% of cases. So, I mean, that's just, we see that, but I feel like the people on the other side are still feeling a lot of guilt and shame, and it must be me, and I'm the one that has to go through all these painful procedures and get shots and do all the things. And it just seems like there's just all of this new science that's coming out.
Yeah.
And that just because you have bajillions of sperm doesn't mean they're going to make a baby. Like,
that's right.
And you can't just say like, well, that's all I can do. Like, my sperm's there. What are you?
Oh my gosh. So. Ashley, that's so true. Just shrug. Like, I provided a bajillion sperm. Like, what else do you want me to do?
And it just, like, on that website, there's a lot of things that can be done that seem so much less invasive than what the uterus owners have to go through.
That's right.
And this varicocelles, I don't know how to say it. It's a worm-like bundle of enlarged or dilated varicose veins around the testicles. Most common identifiable cause of male infertility. And they're found in 15% of like normal males and approximately 40% of infertile men. And the whole thing about it is that it's like, they call it a microsurgical procedure. And they just use a microscope and it seems like nothing compared to, even just taking meds, like the hormones and those. So I definitely am excited to learn more about that, because I think it's time that we evaluated both sides a little bit better. Because like, even when we were going through IVF, all they did was check down sperm. That's
right.
It was just so. And then even when you go through the IVF and you have the embryos and everything, like, they're still responsible for whether those embryos are healthy or not and whether things get fertilized. And so it's time to crack down on that, I think.
I agree. I mean, I do think, I feel like there's a like much larger conversation happening around it right now than when I was. That was not even on the radar in 2016, 17, 18.
Yeah.
So it's really
a women's issue.
Yes. Like, and it's so exciting that they're starting to have that conversation. And, I wonder, like, as the population declines, like, a lot of, countries are finding like lower birth rates because people are like not having children at the same rate. And I wonder if they're like, we got to get everybody on board. Like, let's make sure everybody can do it because we need more children. I don't know. That's just speculation, but.
I learned that in Spain, their population was on a big decline.
Yeah.
And so they started doing IVF for free. And a friend of mine noticed like tons of twins walking around. And I think I told you that before.
Yeah.
Couldn't figure out why there were so many twins. And it's because people were waiting longer. So their rates of getting pregnant were down.
Totally.
Like, and then it's very interesting. I could handle going to Spain for some IVF.
For some free IVF.
Even discounted. Yeah. I would take that. That would be fine.
They are going to probably hopefully start examining what's to come. Like, can everybody pitch in here? And people with testicle included.
Yes. I think that raising or like completely eliminating the 35 myth of everything shutting down at 35 would be really wonderful.
Yeah.
Too. I think it would really help mentally a lot of people going into this. And because it doesn't, that 30, it's old fashioned. It doesn't, it doesn't, my own OB said, I asked her if I was high risk because I'm over 35. And she's like, no, you're healthy. Like, why would you be high risk? I'm like, but I'm over 35, like by 6 years.
Yeah.
And just like, nope, I don't see why that would be. And I just loved that. I was like, I needed to hear that when I was 34.
Well, yeah. And I think you're bringing up like a really good point. I think there have been like sweeping policies or decisions or timelines mm-hmm. made around reproductive health. And it really is, it really does come down to the person, like your mm-hmm. egg reserve and your physical health and your, you know, you don't present as that like average geriatric 35-year-old, like, so instead of basing it on age, like run the tests and say like, mm-hmm. actually you look in your prime for having children.
Yeah.
And somebody or who's have 26,
the
number
be the egg reserve. Yeah.
Right. Somebody who's 26, yeah. but like for some reason does not produce a, you know, typical amount of eggs, or their reserve is low, or who knows, any number PCOS. Of things. They have PCOS, yeah. they have cancer, like, you know,
yeah.
then tell them about their odds based on those mm-hmm. test results. But instead of this like sweeping geriatric, it's like, what? Yeah. That doesn't help. That really doesn't help anyone. It is. It's completely outdated.
No. Because if you haven't had kids up until 35, it's because it's likely because that wasn't in your plan.
Yeah.
And then now that you're 35, you've got a plan, but.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was not your priority. It's not how you laid your life out, and you mm-hmm. decided to pursue other things besides yeah. children. And now you're like ready, you're secure, you feel capable. And they're yeah. like, oh no, you're old. Yeah. So you go to the geriatric wing and it's like, well, just, yeah. can you run a test or two before you say that? Like,
yeah, yeah, you know. It's true.
And just, I think you mentioned this before on a different episode, but, just like informing young people of like what's to come and having conversations about freezing eggs or, you know, running those tests or just like, you know, you take that
even
health.
That you have eggs.
Right.
Like, I think just starting with basics. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. And I can only hope that the more common it becomes, freezing sperm, freezing eggs, doing all of that, it gets cheaper for people, because it's just not, you know, someone in their early 20s is not wanting to spend a bunch of money thinking about what they're going to want to do when they're 40. Like, it just, maybe there are some that do that, but
yeah.
I sure wouldn't have cared. I'd be like, oh, I'll be fine.
Yeah.
So I think that it's going to become more common. I hope that it becomes more common. I think it'll save a lot of hurt and heartbreak and a lot of money down the line too. Like,
yeah.
So
I agree.
Yeah. Let's start a egg bank.
Okay. Where you can come give us your eggs. Is yeah. that what you mean? Yeah.
Well, you can freeze your egg. It can be like an approachable place.
Yeah.
To come and do that. And we'll be really nice to you and not pigeonhole you by your age.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. I just feel like the business plan for that is hard because you have to be around in 10 years
yeah.
or 15 years, or, you know, yeah, you have to true. Think you're going to be in it to win it.
yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, you can, you know, you could give us some eggs to hold on to, and then you could have a martini or a Mai Tai. Yeah. Like, you know, you can come visit your eggs.
Yeah. Travel the world.
Yeah.
Do what you need to do.
Yeah, we got you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know. And I think like, oh, I guess it's true. Like I started my period when I was 12. So, you know, that was 25 years ago. And you think like every month you've had your period, you've lost an egg. But still, like, that's nothing compared to how many eggs you have.
Right.
Or some people have, right?
Yeah.
I can't do the math in my head right now, but that's a lot of eggs and also only a very small percent of what we're born with, I feel. Maybe not.
I will never get used to the fact that this girl in my belly has eggs already.
I know, like, Ashley. I know. That what? Is so weird.
And I feel like my mom didn't know that. No one told her that. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So like we're learning so much that it's just like it used to just be for doctors and surgeons, and now it's like, oh, I get a window into this.
Yeah.
Like it was just kept top secret. You don't get to know about your body. Like,
right.
You know, draw that weird snaky diagram. Here's your fallopian tube. And, you know, here's how to use a tampon. If you're lucky, you have someone teaching you how to use a tampon.
Right. Oh my God. I mean, this is just me and my own ignorance. But the other day I was going to go swimming and I was having my period and it was kind of a heavy period. And I was just like, wait, can I be in the pool with a tampon? Like I had to Google it. And I was like, well, I am 37. Like I am an adult with a uterus who has had her period for, you know, forever. And I was like, wait, I can do that. Right. That's so
sad. The rules changed.
Well, I was like, what happens? Like, what would happen if I did that?
Yeah.
You know, because I'm not trying to bleed in the pool, but I also like don't want pool water in my vagina. Like, so right. what are the rules?
Yeah.
So
Frankie.
Yeah.
I still remember my mom telling me that the blood stops coming out when you're in the water, like when you're in the bath or the lake or and I just really wanted to know why.
Yeah,
that happens. And it would have been such an awesome like learning time to she would be like, I don't know, let's get the encyclopedia, because like
yeah,
the '80s,
right?
And you know, it would have been great, but she's just like, oh, I don't know why, it just does.
Like, yeah, well, and I remember reading that on Google. I was like, well,
yeah,
it's true. There's like a, you know, there's pressure, like the water is pressing, but they're like, just be careful when you get out. I'm like, I can only imagine like what, you know. So I did not go swimming because I was like, I can't handle this. I can wait like 3 days and go swimming after.
What does teenage Emily do? You probably went swimming.
I have no idea. That was so long ago. I probably didn't go swimming. I wouldn't be caught dead in a swimsuit. I have no idea. I'm like, you know, there are 3 good weeks every month where I can go swimming. I don't need to go this week.
You're not that much of a swimmer.
But you know, people do it all the time. So
yeah, like they don't like not go to the Olympics because they have their period.
Oh, can you even imagine? We're getting off the rails, but I thought about like, you know, athletes who menstruate. Yeah. Having to do that. I'm sure they're like medicated in a way where they're taking like birth control that would prevent. I don't know.
Yeah, I think so.
I have thought about that.
Write that down. Learn more about
menstruating Olympic athletes.
We have a lot of research to do.
We do. Great. We are going to be busy in the off season. So I think it's like really important to highlight things that people mentioned that were helpful to them when they were going through. And one thing that came up in every episode was acupuncture.
So
maybe you can share our plan for season two. Oh, guest.
Well, my favorite acupuncturist is going to be a guest And she is just fantastic. And I feel like I need to credit my pregnancy to her in like so many ways. I don't know how the meridians work. I just go in and I let the professionals do their thing, but I know how I feel. And I can look around my city and see all of these people that have been helped by her. And her name is Rebecca Sprint, and it's Family Acupuncture and Wellness. And she's a therapist, she's a sister, she's everything you need her to be. And I got so excited because soon I get to go to her twice a week.
Yay.
for support. I don't know what changes when you're like super pregnant and you go, but you go more often. And just knowing that someone is taking care of you and trying to help and telling you things are okay. And she's had two kids herself, so like, you know, she just gets it. And when you walk down the hall of her her clinic, there's all these pictures of babies that have been born from people who had kind of given up and turned to acupuncture, I think, in a lot of the scenarios. And even on my darkest, like most miserable days when I was trying to get pregnant, those pictures never made me angry. They always made me happy because it's like, there's hope and, you know, why can't this work for me? So I'm like, she does acupressure and cupping and all these really cool things. And I can't wait to learn more from her in this kind of setting.
Right. Yeah.
Not just talking about me, like talking about, you know, because she understands food and what can help people. And yeah, so
cool.
Yeah,
I know, I'm excited to talk to her and to your friend who's doing the male factor infertility. I think having experts on, because we are not the experts, we've made that very clear. But I think having them on is just going to be really helpful, and hopefully it's going to be comforting in a way, like just to have extra information.
Mm-hmm. Like they wouldn't be specializing in this if there wasn't a this to specialize in. And I think that they're,
love that.
They're, you know, they can find hope when you've got none. And another important thing is that I saw that you can get acupuncture for wrinkles. No one will let me get Botox when I'm pregnant, and it would just be really nice. So I'm going to ask her about that next Monday.
Oh my gosh. Well, that's all back to geriatric pregnancy, right?
Well, exactly. Like I need support.
So I think, you know, we were texting the other day and you were like, I am so happy about the community that I'm building around this baby and your pregnancy. And, I think that was also a theme in the episode. It's just like having your people you talk to, and whether it's like experts, like acupuncturists or your OB or your, specialist, your endocrinologist, or I can't even think of what they're called, reproductive endocrinologist. But just like having that network to rely on and sharing your story. Like I think people who have talked on the podcast about who they've shared with, like having that outlet and just feeling heard. And it's hard. It's really hard to share, to disclose all that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know for me, it's helped eliminate some of the shame that I was feeling in being successfully pregnant. Awesome. And you don't think about that. You think there's shame when you can't figure it out. And then they figured it out, but there's shame in that too. And it's so hard, and you minimize yourself and you don't talk about things. You don't celebrate. And this is teaching me that it's okay to do all of that. And you're allowed to stop waiting for something to go wrong.
Yes.
Give yourself permission to, yeah, find some enjoyment in things.
Definitely. Yeah. And then I think Rachel in her episode talked about acts of service and just like what a, I thought it was like really powerful when she said that either so much fanfare or just like acts of service when somebody has a baby. And it's just like equally helpful and important that when they don't, because something happened, you still are gifting them food, your time, you know, you're asking if you can go on a walk with them, or you just like being present for them in a similar way. And that really struck me. Like,
yeah,
you can still express your love and support for somebody the same way you would if they had a baby. I thought that was really powerful.
Yeah. Well, and that's listening to someone's story and just being in it with them, right, and knowing like, oh, the IUI didn't take, or I'm allergic to this one medication that was going to help everything, or, you know, just being close and there enough for a person to trust you with how the results go. And then, being there. Because there's such a, spectrum of loss in all of this. It's not just miscarriage. And it's not within that, it's not like a 3-week miscarriage or a 6-month miscarriage. It's like all of the little baby steps that lead up to things magically working out.
Yeah.
And there's just a lot of loss along the way, generally.
Yeah.
It might seem like little ones along the way, but it builds. And if you can have people there to support that, it makes all the difference in the world. Like, I love that idea. Like, if someone brought me a lasagna, you know, when my third IUI didn't take, I'd be like, man, yes, this is exactly what I need right now. Like,
it's true.
Yeah.
It's so true. But it's just, even having been through that, I'm not thinking that way. I'm not like, oh, you know, she had a miscarriage, I should take something to her. Like, that's just not in my, it was not in my brain. And now I'm like, I absolutely should do that. Like, I made food for my neighbors who just had a baby. And it's like, that was so obvious. Right. And, but if they hadn't had the baby or if something had happened, then I wouldn't have been like, I should still make that meal for them. But of course you should. Yeah. Like, that's how you show up for people. And, it's just
good and the bad.
Totally. Yeah. And I think that's just what we need. We need it. People need that. Mm-hmm. And they talk about that in the episodes. And I just think finding the humor, like all three of us individually, you and me and Mariana, and probably the other people who shared their stories, but we had those blue pills, right? And but I didn't think, and I don't know if you two thought, like, I should share this while I'm doing it. But it's like, we should have. Like, why wouldn't we have shared that? Because it's funny and it's weird and it's emotional, and you're miserable when you're doing it, and you're just only after talking on a specified podcast did we like share that story. It's like, well, no, we should have all been sharing. Why haven't we been sharing those stories? But it's just vulnerable. But it's also, that makes it so lonely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know what? Like, Dan doesn't want to hear, doesn't find the humor in these kinds of things as much as someone who's gone through it would find. Because I think it can be light every once in a while. You know, it can. I still feel like I'm traumatized from 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. when I had to, you know, hide the pearls, as my dear father called it. But it'll be 8 o'clock if I'm still awake, and I'll be like, I don't have anything to do right now. And like, it was that long, it went on that long, that I'm still, you know, 9 months later, still going like, oh, I don't have anything to do at 8 o'clock tonight.
It's true. And, you know, it's
trauma, I think. I don't know.
It is trauma. And I think the outside world has like a really large view of what IVF is. And they're like, it's needles and then you have a baby.
Yeah.
But it's like so many other things for so long. The lead up to IVF is just like weeks and weeks and weeks, and medication after medication. And it is needles. That is like a very prominent part of it. But there are other steps you have to take. And that is just, it's so lonely. And just talking about it, just sharing. Like, if I had been at work and just shared that I was like, I have to go, you know, put these blue pills, like, that's totally inappropriate. But I would have felt less, like, maybe less lonely about it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Or the person would have been like, oh my God, I can't believe she's sharing, she's fired. But
she's become unhinged.
Yeah. I don't know. There is a balance, but I think it's okay to be vulnerable. And it in fact helps, even though it doesn't feel that way at the time.
Yeah.
I think we should, you know, I want to encourage people to reach out to us if they're interested in starting a conversation about sharing their story / experience / adventure. Because we did have some people who thought they were ready to share. And then after some email exchanges, decided they didn't want to share anymore. And that's totally fine. Like, we're not in the business of pressuring anyone to share, and we can appreciate the anxiety and the shame and the feelings that can come up about sharing. But, you know, we just have this pretty basic template of like what you can expect if you want to be on our show. And so if that's something that sounds even remotely interesting to you as a listener, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at misconceptionspod@gmail.com. We're very friendly, I promise. And you know, absolutely no pressure. We can email all day long about what to expect.
And if we record the episode and you decide you don't want it to be aired, we're like totally open to that too.
And
hopefully we were able to listen and be there for you, and you just need an audience of two. And maybe not a larger audience, like our enormous audience.
That's right.
Out there.
Well, and I think a lot of the people who have shared their stories have talked about it's rare to start and finish the story in sequence. Like, you know, some people will want to talk to you about what happened during a specific pregnancy, or they'll want you to recount like, they're going through IVF, so what was your IVF story? But it's very rare to sit down and start from starting to try and then getting to the end of your story. And it's kind of a time capsule that we're providing people to just go back and listen anytime they want to their story, because things do get fuzzy.
Yes.
So having it in a story is like, oh, wait, that's right, this happened. And I think a lot of people who have contributed so far are like, thanks for this. Like, it's
Oh,
good
it's
to
been
have.
so sweet.
Yeah, we've had really, really awesome guests for our first season.
Yeah, brave, brave folks.
Absolutely. So.
So I think next season we want to keep that going, but also introduce some experts in their field and just learn together. And yeah.
Yeah, and maybe one of our goals next season would be to like get the stats right or remember
Learn the acronym.
remember what things stand for and why you took them. You know,
I still don't know all the body parts, so I'll print something out and have it around so I know where things go.
Yeah, Ashley's going to keep her notes on testicles somewhere safe.
Many. Yeah. And if someone could just like call me and tell me how to pronounce varicoceles, that would be helpful. I'm not planning on saying it a lot.
Yeah.
But I want to know how to say it
when
I have to.
Yeah. Just at the
you
beginning
never
of
know
the episode.
When that's going to come up.
yeah. Maybe our expert can help us with that.
I think so.
And we're also open to suggestions. Like, is there something we haven't covered that is interesting to you or a topic you want to learn more about from us? Because obviously we're a wealth of knowledge. But, you know, reach out and let us know if there's something that you are interested in hearing from us.
Yeah.
So I don't know, you know, we're going to keep working on this and we're hopeful that we'll have some new episodes in a new season. The beginning of 2023.
Oof, right. Yeah.
What? How is that possible? What is time?
I don't know. I don't get it.
I don't get it either.
That, you're scaring the 35-year-olds. Don't talk.
Oh my gosh. All right. Well, we are we're all rooting for you, Ashley. This is very exciting.
Oh,
we're
thank
sending you.
You
off on a new adventure.
Yeah, I can't wait to tell everyone whether I poop or not. It seems to be the only thing that anyone wants to know. So, yeah, I'll let you know.
Oh, my gosh.
You can edit it out if you have to. But
I am not editing that out. That is
yeah,
definitely
going
in.
It's an important conversation.
All right. Well, thank you to all of our listeners. We're really excited about this project. And I encourage people to go back and listen to our episodes because I think our podcast gained momentum as more episodes came out. But like, don't forget to listen to Ashley's episode is first, like where she explains her adventure. And then my episode is the second episode where we just talk about all the things that happened. So. Don't, and then also everybody like go back and listen to the different episodes, get ready for season two. okay. Well, you probably need to like go eat dinner and go to bed.
Oh, good. It's really bad time for me over here.
Go have some lasagna.
Oh my God. That sounds so good.
Well, we did it. We did season one.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. I love you. And
I love you.
I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, sounds good.
Bye.
Bye.
This has been another episode of Misconceptions Podcast. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to be on the show, please email us at misconceptionspod@gmail.com. You can also follow along for behind-the-scenes footage at our Instagram account, Misconceptions Podcast. Take care.